who are you? The proud lord said that I must bow so low. Only a cat of a different coat, that's all the truth I know. And a coat of gold or a coat of red, a lion still has claws. And mine are long and sharp, my lord, as long and sharp as yours. And so he spoke, and so he spoke, that lord of Castamere. But now the rains weep o'er his hall, with no one there to hear. Yes, now the rains weep o'er his hall, and not a soul to hear.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 68, recorded live Wednesday, June 5th. It's June, holy crap. I am Joel Duggan. To my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of Cardboard Treehouse. Mr. Francis, how are you doing?
Hello, ladies.
Ladies. Ladies, our guest isn't a lady.
I know.
Well, maybe,
I know.
Maybe he's a... Are you calling him a lady? Lou, I think he just called you a lady.
No, I did not call him a lady.
I know that when I've done phone support where I work, that I've been mistaken for a woman, but... I can't imagine that.
I can't hear that at all.
No, I don't hear that at all. I will defend you, sir.
Yeah, I don't hear that at all.
I blame my headset.
Yeah, well, there you go. ladies and gentlemen, Lou Page is with us from Zombies Ate My Podcast and many other articles that he writes on the internet. Do you have a catch-all website, Lou? Do you have a place where
No, I'm working on one. Ah. I'm working on one.
But your Twitter, Busy Zombie Lord, is probably the easiest way to catch all the stuff that you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Cool. Right on. Well, if you are new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where myself and my co-hosts come to talk about the cool stuff we're into. Gravitate towards sci-fi fantasy stuff, but we're not myopic. If it's an album, a website, a book, a TV show, movie, we'll let you know what we think about it, good or bad. We generally talk positive, but sometimes we have bones to pick. But yeah, that's just the way we roll. As far as the show, a little bit of news, just to let everybody know, spoke a little bit about it in the pre-show here. We stream live every Wednesday night on joelduggan.com/live, and Justin TV is the streaming channel of choice, and unfortunately, they have started running inline ads. So while you're watching the show, if an advertisement just overlaps us, I think it's every half an hour or so, the ad is the average length of a television ad. It will completely interrupt us. You will miss whatever we're saying, and then eventually you'll get brought back. I have not figured out a way around it or figured out a way to switch providers if I'm going to. So right now, that's the way that the cookie crumbles on the live stream. The ads do not appear, of course, in the on-demand version of the podcast on thecitadelcafe.com or on iTunes. So yeah, apologize for that. I didn't see it coming. I'm still going to work on that because, of course, I draw... live sometimes, and I stream, and I think it would be really annoying if you're watching, you know, me doing something very specific on a drawing, and then all of a sudden there's an ad that overlays everything visual on the show. So yeah, that's that. Mr. Francis, what's new with you? It's been a couple weeks. We missed last week.
Yeah, just trucking along here, just working on the other project, and you know, just we're shifting direction a little bit on that, so we'll have more. A little bit late in updating what the thing I was talking about a few months ago. Anyway, mm-hmm. it's still in the works.
Because
so.
It's been now yeah. 6 months in development?
6 months in development, and we probably got another month and a half to go before we get the green light or the red light. We'll see what happens.
Wow.
Anyway, more about that off the show.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so other than that, just things around the house, you know, getting all the pollen and debris off of the deck from all the oak trees and everything around the house, and
fun.
Discovering that as I'm approaching 40, I'm getting more and more allergies, which is great. You know, watching the body fall apart, it's a wonderful thing.
So did you have hay fever growing up?
No.
Yeah, I did.
No.
I've seemed to have grown out of it a little bit, but it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had hay fever most of my life, and as I've gotten older, I feel like I either live where there's less pollen, or whatever it is I was allergic to has gone away. So, unfortunately, my wife has a skin condition that's caused by allergies, and we found out that basically all the trees in the yard are what she's allergic to. So that's why her skin's been bothering her since we moved into this apartment.
Oh, jeez. So,
But if you ever want some alone time, you know where to find you, right?
Exactly.
Sitting in a hammock underneath the trees.
That is too funny. Well, I've been actually out in the pollen lately. I've been taking the time to get back in shape. It's been a long time. I had for those of you who've been listening to the show for a while, I've mentioned the fact that I've got a lower back problem, and running is the best thing for it because no one runs hunched over. At least you're not supposed to. And I've been taking it slow, but talk about a blow to the ego. Like, I don't think I've ran since August, maybe July. And, I mean, I try to stay in pretty good shape, but I mean, I got a little soft over the winter. And, I was not able to get around even 3 kilometers, a month ago. And it wasn't until Monday of this week that I was able to get an actual run, what I would consider a good run. In, and that's like 4K without really stopping, you know, for anything more than just like a short break at a stoplight or something like that. So I was quite happy to be inching my way back into shape. But I remember when I used to do this in like, you know, 22, 23 minutes for 4K, and I'm clocking in around 30 right now, mm-hmm. extra minute or two per kilometer. It's it's slow. I hear you, Peyton. I feel old.
Yeah. But I did go out cutting last week, which was fun.
Oh, did you actually get to the beach? Right on.
Not to the beach, actually. Oh. I took my son down to the football field.
That's right. I forgot about the field.
Yeah, and our neighbors gave him a little, probably 0.5-meter little kite. Mm. And so we took it out, and he played with that for a bit, and then I took it to 2-meter kite. And anyway, he had a ball flying on his own. He didn't really want to play with the bigger one. He just wanted to play with the small one, but... Mm. You know, once he got up in the air, I just walked away, and you know, I got some great video of my 3-year-old playing with a kite by himself. So
well,
it was
that's
fun.
Fun, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to when he's a little bigger, we can take him out on the beach and strap him to the 5. That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Well, I think I mentioned in an email to you, I've got some smaller kites that would still be flyable for him. Yeah. Even you'd sit with him, but he could still fly it on his own. They wouldn't pull him around. Yeah. They're probably about the same size. They're probably about 0.5 meter. They're little rainbow kites, and they're a lot of fun. A lot of fun to fly. Lou, do you fly kites at all? You ever?
No. I used to, but I don't live anywhere where there's a good gust of wind.
Okay.
I have to drive half an hour, 45 minutes to get to anywhere where there's any good wind.
Yeah. Yeah, well, being right here in Halifax, I mean, we're a 20-minute drive from the beach, which is... really steady wind. And several years ago, Peyton and I used to take our giant kites, 5-meter power kites out and kind of do some sand surfing and get pulled all over the place. I still have the dirt board here somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the most fun I've ever had on that beach was going out with my friend Alex, and he had a couple of buggies. So they're little 3-wheeled kind of go-karts that you sit in. Yeah. You put the kite out to one side and it kind of acts like the sail on a sailboat. And it pulls you forward, and man, that was fun. A little scary when you start hitting like 20, 30 kilometers an hour, you know, with there's like rocks and seashells and stuff, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to slow down a little bit.
You say he one time he clocked himself with his GPS doing about 70, I think.
70, yep.
Yeah, on a buggy that was only speed rated for 50, so that could have jackknifed at any moment.
Yeah, yeah. He wears proper protective gear too. I mean, dressed up like he's doing a motocross race. You know, like he's got like a jaw guard and a helmet and shin pads and elbow and rib cage pads
and he had knee braces.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, he had all kinds of stuff, which is funny too because he's a really tall guy. Alex is like 6'4", I want to say.
Something like that.
Yeah, he's pretty tall. But that was, man, I miss doing that. I wish my back, I I'm feeling pretty good lately, but I don't have the confidence, and I don't want to risk injuring myself
again.
We'll
get there.
So yeah, it'll be a little while yet. But I do have to give a shout out here on the show. Speaking of getting back into shape, several months ago we had JJ Valentine and his wife Renee on the show, and they've been doing this weight loss program where they keep track of and tweet out how much weight they're losing every week. And JJ just passed the 100-pound mark.
Congratulations.
Since he has started, which is just insane, incredible. Like, I mean, I can't believe that he lost 100 pounds. And Renee has lost a lot of weight as well. I don't know. And even if I did, I wouldn't say, because there's something about, I don't know what it is about guys losing 100 pounds who are just like, rawr, yeah, go you. And then women, you're just like, you've lost weight. That's good. Like, I don't want to be too specific. However, they posted a picture on Facebook of just like a family gathering over the weekend. Jocelyn and I couldn't find Renee. We didn't recognize her.
Nice.
Because she slimmed down. Yeah. And we're going to see them in a month at Nurtacular. So we're really stoked to have some time to hang out with them. They're feeling great. They're really excited about everything. They're part of a larger group on Frog Pants. And I think when we had them on the show here on TCC, the group itself had lost over a ton.
Wow.
Yeah.
Altogether. So my dad actually just joined Weight Watchers because he's going to slim down, and I'm going to see if he's interested in joining the group, because they track things on the app, and dad's got an iPad and he likes freaking with that kind of stuff because he's retired, and I'll see if he wants to check that out, because I think it might be good for him as kind of like a motivator.
Yeah. It's also nice to make you accountable to other people as well. You know?
Well, yeah, that's part of the reason for the group and the app and stuff like that. And I think the app is all tied into, like, you track your food and you post your weight and you integrate with other people socially all within the one app.
Nice. It's called Lose It, and I have it on my phone.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Are you part of it, Lou?
I'm not part of the group, but after you interviewed them, I downloaded it, both me and my wife. And we used it for a couple of months. We fell behind because of, you know, life stuff happening. You lose track of what you're supposed to be tracking. But we did it for a couple of months, and I was down 15 pounds.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah, very cool. I'll definitely have to pass that on to Dad. I meant to when they were on the show, but that was a while ago. And it was before Dad went down south for the winter, and there's just no way he loses weight when he's down there partying with his friends for 3 months. So, which I can appreciate. And I do have one more little bit of business before we move on to the rest of the show, and that is that I am very excited to be doing my very first book signing on Saturday, June 15th. It's going to be right here in Halifax at the Strange Adventures Bookshop on Prince Street, the new location for the shop. So,
corner Prince and Water Street, yeah.
Lower Water, yeah. Prince and Lower Water. So if you are local to Halifax, Dartmouth, Bedford, Sackville, Nova Scotia, Cape Breton, PEI, New Brunswick, maybe as far as Quebec, I don't know. Maybe you like my comic that much. But I will be signing, let's see if I can remember all the things that we're doing. Lots of books on hand. I don't think I'm going to be doing artist editions in the store because I feel like that would take too long. However, I think I'm going to sign and sketch in a numbered sequence of books and bring them with. So there'll be a limited number of artist editions there, as well as a raffle draw for a 9x12 original piece by me. And there was one other thing. I don't remember what it was. Oh, well, must have been the lie. I think that might have been it. Oh, the time, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday. That's the June 15th. So yeah, that's what's happening. I'm stoked. I've never done a book signing before.
Makes a great Father's Day gift.
Exciting stuff.
I would think so. When is Father's Day? Do we know? Do I remember?
The 16th, I think.
Oh, the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dads and sons, come down and hang out and read comics. I would say that my book is family friendly, PG-13. I would think so. There's no swearing or nudity. There's some boob jokes, but I mean, what 13-year-old doesn't like boob jokes?
Yeah.
I can't think of any that don't.
Yeah. Right on. Well, I guess we can dive into the meat of the show, which is, of course, the Oil winter meat. Is coming. Season 3, spoiler-filled part of the show where we talk about one of our favorite shows, Game of Thrones, and we will spoil the crap out of the show. So if you haven't seen episode 9 and Twitter didn't destroy your Monday, then you should bail right now. I post on the blog in the show notes when we start and stop the Game of Thrones talk, so you can pick up later on. But for now, we're going to be talking in depth about what happened on the show on episode 9 of the season. And we're going to spoil the crap out of it. It is called The Reigns of Castamere. And there's just, there's really only three different settings this week. We only get to see what's happening with Daenerys, with Jon Snow, and with Robb and Catelyn Stark. So where do you guys want to start? Across the Narrow Sea?
Well, you do have the bit with Hodor as well.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Well, okay, yeah, because it's all in the north. So there's the north. There's the Riverlands, and then there's Across the Narrow Sea. So yeah, I forgot about Bran and Arya there. Because, people are so close. And that's the thing that I guess we can start with, is that I really like, especially in the books, because it doesn't happen at the same time in the books. You get these chapters, several chapters apart, and you have to kind of remember, wait a minute, is that the mill? Is that the road? Is that the wall where, you know, Bran and Rickon are? Because that's where Jon is right now, and that means they're really close. And then you hear Jon thinking about, like, is that a wolf I hear howling? And it's really neat how close Martin gets them in the books, and they do a good job of that in the show, where you're just like, God, you guys are just so close to one another.
Just like, oh, here's a little bit of hope.
No, not today.
That's kind of his motif. He likes to give you a little bit of hope and then yank it away.
Yeah. It's like a barbed spear in your shoulder. He's like, you don't need that. You don't need that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess what I really liked about what happened, I guess, across the Narrow Sea with Daenerys, it was a very straightforward kind of plot line there, where they're just kind of going in the back door. I still don't really understand the motivations of Daario Naharis, but the fighting in that scene was awesome.
That was some of the best fighting I've seen in the show thus far.
Agreed. I really like how it's like, you know, 2 to 4 kind of moves, and then someone dies.
Yeah.
You know, there's no...
you really see how they are professional warriors. They're like, let's just get to work here.
Yeah.
There's no messing around.
The fantastic part was each one of them has their own fighting style. Yeah. And you could tell. Like, it didn't look like it was ham-fisted. It looked like each one of them knew what they were doing with their fighting style and the weapon they were using.
Yeah, the worm was quite proficient with his lance.
Oh yeah. What's his name?
Grey Worm.
Yeah.
Grey Worm, yeah.
Yeah.
And
he was pretty cool. He did a lot of stuff where he, like the Bruce Lee thing, where he was hitting people when he wasn't looking at them.
Yeah.
You know, like they stand kind of like off kilter and they look at the ground and then they smack someone behind them. I really enjoyed Jorah Mormont. I thought his stuff was very, very precise. I really enjoyed the fighting that was happening with him, which is something that I think you saw in the trailer for this season.
And he looked so hurt when the fight was over, and he and Grey Worm is sitting in front of Daenerys, and she's like, "What of the other guy?" And his face is like, "Oh man!" And then the other guy shows up, right?
Yeah.
It's like, man, I wish that guy had died, but here he comes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was talking to Jocelyn about it when we watched it together, and it was a little clearer in the books, but I just don't get the guy's motivation. Like, it might be just a symptom of the fact that, you know, the television show has to move forward so quickly. But, like, one minute he's opposing her, and the next minute he's swearing fealty and love to her. And, outside of catching her in the bathtub naked, really nothing's happened.
Yeah, but I think he's probably just a very ambitious man. Mm. And he sees, well, she's a single woman who's going to be queen of all this if I help her, so...
I see. You know, yeah. Okay.
He's setting himself up to be king, right?
That's a good point.
In the books, they describe him as a ladies' man, and that all the women love him.
Right.
And he doesn't really. He's not interested in all the women. He likes the power and.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And he's kind of trying to seduce her.
Yeah. I still think they could have picked a better looking guy.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. When I saw the guy with the scar on his face. And then him in the previous episode, I was like, which one of them is Daario again?
That's what I thought too.
And then it was the dude with the long hair. And I was like, hey, he's kind of like the one I wouldn't picture as Daario. Okay, I don't know what they're going for with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And I find that I'm not sure what kind of accent he's speaking with either. It kind of loses me. It's not clear. Like, it's not definitely Dothraki. It's not definitely, you know, one of the other, like, I mean, Second Sons, wherever they're from. I mean, they're probably, they're sellswords. They're probably a mix of people. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint. I haven't clung to his character in any way yet. Like, I don't really have anything to identify with him, I think is probably my issue. But yeah, beyond that, I mean, it was a fairly short sequence over there. There wasn't a whole lot going on. They quickly moved the show back to not the Riverlands, but I guess the North, where Bran, Rickon, I can't remember the frog kids' names, and Hodor and Asha are all heading towards what is supposed to be Castle Black, but Bran has decided he wants to go beyond the wall because of the powers that he is developing. Mm-hmm. And it's when Bran and Rickon actually split up to protect the House of Stark. They're sending one heir in one direction, and Bran is going on his own mission. So I just I really enjoyed the way that they handled his reservation, in that he can't control wolves by will, it's only in his dreams, and he's slowly starting to learn that he's a warg, and we now know what that is.
And not just any, but he's probably like the most powerful wog ever. Right?
Well, yeah, because they're not supposed to be able to control people. And because he's so scared of getting caught with the thunderstorm and Hodor freaking out, that he ends up controlling Hodor. And it's really quite cool, because in the books, it's described quite visually, where all of a sudden Bran is like in Hodor's body and he's walking again. And that was a big thing that I was kind of disappointed that they didn't hit on, was that he doesn't just get into Hodor's head and knock him out. Like he for a minute realizes that he has legs again.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's a big deal, right? And I thought that was a little bit... Maybe, I mean, I'm sure they'll probably get to it. But for now, I thought that was a little bit...
It's also a hard thing for them to show.
Oh, very much
TV
so.
Show.
Yeah, like, no, I agree.
It was going to take a lot more setup, and they were trying to throw a lot at you in these the two sequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're all up in the tower freaking out. And, of course, Jon is down below.
Yeah.
And I really, like, I've been waiting for weeks, because we all know how I feel about Ygritte, and I can't wait for this all to just be behind us, because it just drives me nuts.
They don't get back together?
Well, regardless, regardless of whether they get back together or not, I just can't stand her or any of the wildling folks. Well, I guess I kind of like to hate the guy with the big red beard.
Yeah.
But everybody else, I'm just kind of like, bleh. Like, I just can't deal.
I like how Jon finished off the other warg.
Oh, the warg. Yeah. Like, yeah, I was great. You were right. This was my intention the whole time. And I was like, God, it's about time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of people, both television show and books, root for Jon.
Yeah.
Because he's got a certain appeal. A lot of Ned Stark's kind of morality and honor, but then of course he's at the Night's Watch, which is filled with people that don't have any,
right,
or very little.
He seems to know how to play the game better than his father. That's for sure.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, I would agree.
But Ygritte was so hurt, so pissed.
Well, and the thing that I don't get to is, like, they keep on testing Jon and keep on saying he's not going to kill the guy. He's not going to kill the guy. And I got the feeling that Jon probably would have. But every time he picks up the freaking sword, he gets it to a backswing, and then everybody starts shouting at him. See, he couldn't do it. I told you he couldn't do it. It's like, well, if I had people shouting at me, I would pause at the top of my swing too. You know, like, yeah.
Exactly.
It's kind of dumb. Like, they reminded me of school bullies, you know, like, no matter what you say, they're going to spin it around and throw it back at you while you're just sitting there kind of going, oh, look, just shut up. You know, give me the pointy thing. Let me stick it through your heart for a change. Yeah, it was a gratifying scene. I really enjoyed the fact that not only was he fighting with them, but he was better than them, you know, that he was able to take them down. Like, what did you guys think of the combination of Bran and Rickon and the crew up in the tower and Jon down on, as like kind of like the near miss situation?
Well, I thought it was, you know, it was neat, and you know, I don't know if I guess it was just sort of a setup towards what happens later on with Arya as well, you know, just, you know, give that little taste and just a little bit of hope before he tears the family completely asunder, right?
Right. Yeah.
I love what Martin does with that, where, like, they get close, and Jon doesn't realize it, but Bran knows that he saw his brother.
Right,
yeah.
And it's like, but I can't tell him I was here.
Yeah.
You know? Because he can't know that I'm still alive, because then everybody will know.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got to keep that on the down low.
Yeah.
That's true.
And now, although, did John see the two wolves take out the...
He did.
He did. Okay. Yeah, he did. So, but okay, I don't think he knows that Bran can control them, because the last time he left Bran was still unconscious.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so, but whether or not he recognized the wolves, I don't know. I would imagine that he would probably be pretty... pretty savvy to it, given that, you know, he's got Snow. Wit, or is it Snow? Ghost, sorry.
Ghost, yeah.
Yeah, where?
He's with,
Where is Ghost?
He's with Sam.
No, he's not now. Maybe he is, but he's not right on the side of them.
They've shown him in the background when Sam is there. You'll see a wolf in the... way in the back shot.
They don't do it all the time.
But yeah, they've done it once or twice.
Yeah, it was either this episode or the last episode where he called the ghost and ghost didn't come with him.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't come. He didn't come closer, but I remember Sam calling out to him because Sam saw him. That's right. That's right.
That's probably in the last one when he killed the guy, killed the White Walker.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because again, we didn't get much from Sam either. It was Sam and Jillian. It was just kind of like them seeing the wall. She ogles in wonder of it, and she calls him a wizard because he read books. And I was like, all right.
I got some game.
I kind of like the idea of Sam as a wizard.
Yeah.
You know, I joked around with Jocelyn and be like, you know, you shall not pass. Maybe. Just give me a minute. Let me look it up. You know, just hold on a second. You know, hold that thought.
I do have to say, I am really glad that this season we're seeing more of the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Because was kind of my big disappointment with the first two seasons.
Yeah. Well, and the opening sequence, I think, was like the wolf walks by the camera and then a horse walks by the camera. And I kind of went, well, wait a minute. They were the same size.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, they obviously did that on purpose to give you the comparison, the size comparison. It's I want to see more, but I mean, we're getting low on wolves in terms of what's happening, which is getting frustrating. So, I mean, we've reached the point where we can't really talk about anything else but the big event. So again, I'm going to warn, if you've braved thus far, spoiler alert, reading the books, watching the shows, whatever, just... this is going to ruin your day if this is going to be spoiled for you. Now, my biggest problem with spoilers is that there's a lot of people on social media and stuff like that just don't seem to be considerate of other folks. And granted, I read the books. I still didn't know when this was going to happen. And I had it spoiled for me on Twitter. And I then promptly tried to warn friends that I know hadn't read the books to avoid Twitter before seeing the show. And I'm not alone. There's a lot of people that... several people just kind of turned Twitter off. They're like, screw it. My friends are telling me it's bad news, so I'm just going to turn it off. Yeah. The worst thing is that any reaction at all is going to let somebody who's read the books know immediately what happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
And jokes about honeymoons and stuff as well.
Well, that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, and it's just, and some people were spoiling it less than 12 hours after the HBO show had aired, and they weren't tagging it with any kind of spoiler alert before they went into it. And it was just, it's really annoying. It's one of the reasons why I'm staying the hell away from Twitter when Superman comes out. Like, I don't want to hear reviews.
Yeah,
there's
like a 13-minute featurette today. Someone posted online of the Man of Steel. I'm like, I don't need to watch that. I'm going to see it in the theater.
I'm going to go watch it in the theater. Yeah, and I'm really getting sick and tired of the spoilers.
Yeah, I've seen so much of Superman now, I think that I know the whole movie. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I made the mistake of watching one of the more recent trailers, which features the bad guy. And I kind of know the plot of the movie, which pisses me off.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm disappointed in that way. But, you know, with regards to Game of Thrones, I really got tired of it. And then somebody had the nerve to tweet me and say, you know, like, well, the books were written 13 years ago. It's not really a spoiler. I was like, dude, just not everybody has read the books, and most people probably haven't that are watching the HBO series. If you took a poll, I guarantee you that most of the people watching have not actually read the books.
I only know of a handful of people that are watching the show that have actually read the books, not counting myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Actually, Jocelyn mentioned something to me over dinner tonight, and that is in an interview that she read with the guy that plays Robb Stark, that he didn't read past this point until just before he recorded the scenes.
Oh.
He was on purpose. He knew what was happening in terms of the general contract that he was on for the show.
He's like, well, this is my last show, okay.
Pretty much. So he
how does it happen?
How does it happen? So but he didn't read it until just before he went on set. To do it. So he was in the dark. Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting kind of very kind of method acting kind of way to go. But I mean, obviously the event, I'll stop pussyfooting around. The Red Wedding happens in this episode, where Walder Frey, who welcomes Robb and his wife and his mother into his home to marry his uncle to one of his daughters, and then murders the lot of them in cold blood during the feast. At the wedding ceremony.
Yeah. I have a question.
Mm.
The uncle, not the one that married, but like the uncle?
Yes, the Blackfish, yeah. The old guy.
Blackfish. He must have, he was in on it, right?
No, he's still alive.
No,
I know that, but was he in on it?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
No, wait, I think he just kind of left.
Locked out.
Okay, yeah,
I think he went up to go for a piss.
Something. Yeah, that's right? What he said. I think he said he excused himself in a very blunt manner.
To piss on, so he said, we're going for a tree to piss on, which means he probably wandered outside of all the encampment, and he's probably perfectly safe. But that also could have, I saw that as sort of a way of, him and his son to gain status by having all the other people killed off, right? So I wasn't quite sure if he was in on it or not, so.
Well, they're Tullys, so I don't really know what they would have. They have more to gain if Robb is alive.
Okay.
So they weren't in on it. I don't remember what happened to the actual uncle that was at the wedding.
He wasn't at the wedding in the books.
No. The one that was married.
Yeah, he was in the bedchamber.
They take him hostage in the books.
Oh, okay, yeah, I couldn't remember. It's been a long time since I've read book three.
All right. Okay.
Go ahead, Peyton.
No, I think what was just past brain fart. Sorry.
Mm. Well, I mean, Lou, I'll ask you. I mean, when you first read this sequence in the book, like where were you? How did it kind of affect you?
I saw it coming a mile away.
Oh yeah.
Because I have a problem with that. I always see the plot point coming a mile away. It's a really bad problem. But in the book, Martin keeps talking about them breaking bread to. Like, this makes you safe. We've broken bread and we've drank the wine. They're safe. They can't hurt us. And the whole chapter before this happens, it's like he beats you over the head. We've broke bread. We've broke bread. We've broke bread.
Yeah.
And I was like, why does he keep telling me that they've broke bread? And then I went, that's because they're going to kill them all. And then 5 seconds later, like 3 pages later, they killed them all. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to it late one night, and usually I would fall asleep listening to the audiobook, then I'd have to back up and pick up where I left off the next day. But this particular night, as the chapter rolled on, I was like, oh, this is getting interesting and serious. And then I literally sat up in bed when they killed a lot of them. I was like, oh, snap. that is some rough stuff. Rough stuff.
Yeah, I'll admit, I wasn't sure they were going to kill everybody.
Yeah, me too.
But I figured they were going to kill off most of them. And then when they killed everybody, I was like, oh, that was a little unexpected.
Well, you expect what I expect. You expect almost everyone but Robb to die.
Right.
You expect there to be a huge setback. You expect there to be, his entire army is decimated or whatever. But you just don't understand that... that he's going to die. I mean, because you think, okay, well, he killed Ned Stark, and that shocked everybody, but it made sense over the next couple of books as you realize, oh, Robb is the one that has to rise and stand up for the North and do all this kind of stuff and avenge his father's death. And uh, it There are some things about the HBO show that do differ, actually. I was actually talking with Chad a little while ago. He sent me a text after finally watching this episode. And he was asking about Rob's wife. And Rob's wife in the book is a completely different person. Different girl altogether. And she wasn't at the wedding. So Martin just never touches on it again. Like, she just is widowed, and I don't remember anything else. She was not there, and she wasn't
pregnant.
They
marry her off to somebody, and that's the last you hear of her.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. But the way they started the entire thing by stabbing her, and I'm like, oh, dude.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, she's pregnant, and of course they stab her in the belly to kill the baby, and it reminds me of something that Cersei had said to Margaery the last episode, which is destroying a family root and stem.
Yeah.
And that was the idea, is that they're not letting anybody anywhere of the Starks live. Yeah. And the idea, of course, from the Lannisters is that they wanted Rob to witness his line dying before Rob himself was killed.
Yeah, so the guy who finished off Rob.
Yep.
Is that the same one who let Jaime go?
No.
Remember, having dinner with Jaime when he was there?
No, the guy that let Jaime go is kind of like a lieutenant or
general. Okay, I
wasn't
sure
he
was the same guy who
stabbed. Of the flayed men, it's, Lou, help me out here.
Not Dondarrion, that's the other guy.
Wow, I can't believe I'm blanking on
that. It's with a B.
Bolton.
Bolton.
Yeah. So Roose Bolton is the sigil is like the flayed man. They're the guys that torture everybody and all that kind of stuff. And he looks and sounds remarkably like Daniel Craig.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
In the show, and yeah, he's Rob's kind of like right hand man. They're bannermen of the Starks, and they haven't shown in the show. They've either been bought or bargained with, or they're going to be receiving something for removing the Starks from any kind of threat to the Lannisters. Because, of course, at the very end there, he says, you know, the Lannisters send their regards and then runs them through. But yeah, like seeing Rob's wife be stabbed in the belly, having all of the crossbow bolts fly immediately, and to know that, like, everybody's there in just clothing. Like, there's no armor, there's no... Like, there was no way anybody was walking away from that.
Yeah.
And I really, even knowing what happened, knowing who lives and who dies, and knowing that it was coming, my heart started racing when the guy shut the door.
Yeah.
To the chamber there. I don't know, Lou, when I read the books, I envisioned it as a much bigger hall, and that the crossbows were higher up and there was more people.
I was going to say, I pictured it like a giant room, and it didn't expect it to be that small.
Yeah.
I think that was more of a budget thing.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
But could Catelyn take a worse hostage?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a smart decision. But she hasn't,
I'll just find another wife.
Yeah. I like Catelyn, but I mean, both Jocelyn and I agree that she does not make good decisions.
But I do like that she actually followed through on her threat, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And talk about acting.
Yeah.
Like, she looked like a different person. Like, her face was so drawn and so just...
She was his mother at that point.
The agony and the anger all at one time in her face was just unbelievable. And you're right. She just kind of lets go, and then that's it. She's like, well, whatever. I'm killing your wife, and, you know, I kind of wish I could get to you before one of your other people would shoot me with a crossbow, but I can't, you know, so...
Now, Frey, I have two points on the actors themselves. So, the guy who's starring Rob Stark is now going to be starring as Prince Charming, I think, in the reboot of Cinderella, the live action, for Disney?
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I think that this move on Game of Thrones of having him killed off in this manner is probably going to garner him many more fans.
It's certainly going to boost his career. He'll be able to take more work now.
Yeah, for sure, right? It'll free him up, but also, you know, he probably got a lot more profile than if he would just, you know, died in battle or something like that. But also, the guy who stars as Walter Frey, I wonder when he originally got his agent said, "We got this role for you," and then the first season, you appear for maybe like 5 minutes. Mm. And then you don't see you again until the end of season three. But people are going to remember you. Because yeah. he's sitting licking his lips and like, oh, this is awesome, right?
That actor kind of gets a lot of those roles. Because he was in all the Harry Potter movies
as
well.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would say, Peyton, is I would disagree about the whole Rob thing. I mean, that was part and parcel of the books.
Well, yeah, I know. I understand that. No, but it just, I think like the timing of him getting this other role as Prince Charming.
Oh, they probably liked him, and then they said, well, let's just wait to film the movie until after season three of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you mean. Oh, I see. Okay, yeah, I see.
Because now, like, up to that point in time, he was just a member of the cast, but now he's Robb Stark.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
I agree.
So. I'm just reading in the chat room here. Frozen Falcon has mentioned that in the books, Kat grabs a son. The phrase, which is more valuable than a wife. And I, unfortunately, like I said, it's been so long since I've read the books that the HBO show and the books are kind of meshing in my head as to what happened and how. So, thanks for that, Frozen Falcon. Much appreciate the correction.
Can I make a suggestion on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Is IGN posts every week a comparison of what's different between the show and the book every week. And so if you've read both and read the books and you're watching the show and you're saying this happened differently, go check out IGN. They have an article they do every week.
Oh,
so,
cool. Good to know. So I guess we might as well wrap up our thoughts on the Red Wedding here. I mean, Peyton, you've already mentioned that, like, as the visceral nature of it affected you. I know Chad has mentioned to me having... you know, just become a new father.
That's the thing, man. It made him
really uneasy.
Yeah. You're like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So was it effective? Like, I mean, not knowing this was coming, did you get spoiled by Twitter or was this a complete shock?
There was a couple posts that sort of led me that like something was going to happen, but I saw someone posted something about a honeymoon or something, right? Maybe. And then like too soon was the joke, was the tag on the joke or something. What I thought was it was the uncle's wedding. Something went awry with his wedding.
I see.
Like as a couple there, right? I'm like, okay. So they're carrying him out. I said, what's the big event? I'm like, oh, good Lord. No. Oh, man. So,
yeah.
But Lee hasn't seen this yet. So I'm going to show
this
right afterwards. I think I'm going to try to record her reaction at the end. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not to post it, but just to... You know.
Yeah. Lou, did your wife read the books?
Yes, but not all of them. She has not gotten to this point yet.
Oh.
Though she kind of knows it's coming, because I've kind of hinted that something bad's coming.
Is she watching the show?
Yes.
So what'd she think?
She hasn't watched this episode. I watched this one alone, because I knew I was going to be on the show today.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right on. Well, I read an article shortly after, because, of course, once I had re-watched the show, I went back and I looked at Twitter and thought about all the hubbub, and there's a real split. There's lots of people that are like, I'm done. This is it. I'm not watching Game of Thrones anymore. And I thought to myself, why on God's green earth would you stop watching the one show that is unafraid to, like Peyton said, dash your hopes?
Yeah.
You know, it's something that what I really liked about the article that I read was that the summary was, Martin is letting you know that absolutely no one is safe. Rob and Catelyn were the last kind of pure good in the show.
Yeah.
Right? So because you're always rooting for the good guy, you know, it's like Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. It's the light over the dark. There's turmoil, there's sacrifice, but ultimately Prince Charming always wins. And that is not the case in this version of Game of Thrones so far on HBO. And I love it because there are people out there that love and root for Arya and they don't know now. They have no idea whether she's going to live or die. Same thing with Jon. Sure. Same thing with Rickon and Bran or Daenerys. I mean, like they get so close to death so often and you really don't know who's safe.
Well,
And Sansa marrying Tyrion now, you're like, oh God, she might actually be safe for a while. Right?
Yeah, for how long?
Yeah.
Right. But I was going to say, in the books too, not to go back to the books versus the show, but none of the story perspectives are ever told from Rob's perspective. They're always told from his mother's perspective.
Catelyn, yeah.
And in the show, they don't do that. There's lots of stuff that's told from Rob's perspective, which they didn't do. So when he dies in the book, you're surprised, but you're like, well, I never got anything from his story anyway. He was always an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
So the show, they've hyped him and hyped him and hyped him, and it's made this event even bigger than it was in the books.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Right on. Well, I haven't really been able to take in a whole lot over the last few weeks because I have been pretty busy. But Lou, what have you been watching outside of Game of Thrones?
The other show I've been watching on a regular basis, which I'll also say just got renewed for a second season, so I'm really excited because I was kind of been watching it, and that's what I hate when I don't know if it's going to get renewed.
Hmm.
And that is Hannibal on NBC. It's kind of the reboot of Silence of the Lambs and Red Dragon.
Okay.
And all of those novels. And it stars the bad guy from Casino Royale. I can't Matt think something? Of his name.
From Casino Royale.
The guy with the bleedy eye. And he
oh,
has
okay. I know
look.
Who. Yeah, I know who he is, yeah.
He plays Hannibal Lecter.
Ooh.
And the other actor plays Bill Graham, the character from Red Dragon.
Okay.
There's a little bit of a difference between the book and the story. In the book, Bill Graham is a FBI agent. In this, he's a wannabe FBI agent that's a profiler they hire. And him and Hannibal are helping catch serial killers across the country. And they're looking for a specific serial killer in between the what's going on in the show. But what they don't know is the real serial killer is Hannibal Lecter. Mm-hmm. And so their boss is Lawrence Fishburne, and they're hunting this guy called, like, the Butcher. And the Butcher is actually Hannibal. And people keep getting killed, and it's like they're hunting the guy that they're friends with. And he keeps making them dinner and things like that. It's really a weird show.
Yeah.
Like, it's always showing him in the kitchen cooking, and then somebody in the show comes over for dinner. And you're like, is he feeding them people? I hope he's not feeding them people.
Yikes.
Yeah, but, I watched one episode, one with the mushrooms.
Yes, that was kind of the weirdest of the episodes.
Yeah, that was pretty messed up.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have cable, so I haven't had a chance to check this one. I didn't even know it existed. Like, I you know, having I don't see commercials, so I don't know. I don't know when these things out.
One of the things that stands out for the show, though, is they've gotten a ton of celebrity guests.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who the comedian Eddie Izzard is?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
He has an entire episode where they think he's the killer, and he's locked away in a mental institution. And it, like, the whole episode is him doing stuff you've never seen him do before. It's interesting.
Oh, wow.
And then Hannibal Lecter himself has a psychologist he sees, and it's played by Gillian Anderson from The X-Files that played Scully.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
And she makes guest appearances. And then the thing that makes me cheer every week is I was a huge fan of Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
And Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall is one of the crime scene techs in every episode, basically doing a Kids in the Hall skit every time you see him.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It sounds like a really twisted show on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
It is, because Bill Graham is damaged. He has a personality disorder where he can relate to people almost to a point where he can put himself in their shoes to a point where it's frightening. And they're pushing him, and he's slowly breaking as the show goes on. Lawrence Fishburne is like, see this person that just killed all these people? I need you to be them. And yeah. He's like, I don't want to. And they're like, but if you don't, he's going to kill more people. And Will Graham's like, this hurts. Please don't make me do it. And then in the same frame, he talks to Hannibal, and Hannibal goes, oh, Bill, I'm sorry he's making you do it, but it's a necessary evil. You can always talk to me about it. And you're like, what's going on? Yeah. Who's the bad guy here?
Bill's getting to the point where he's starting to like it, right?
Right. And you're like, what's going on? It's really twisted, and wow. It's worth watching.
Sounds like it messes with the audience as much as it messes with the characters.
Yes.
Cool.
Very much so.
So Hannibal on NBC?
Yeah.
Cool. I will have to check that out. Well, actually, I actually took some time to do some reading. I read up Twitter every morning, you know, check out some news articles. Most of it's local news, that kind of stuff. It's my one way of kind of keeping current with what's going on. But this past, I want to say on the weekend, I noticed this article from Polycount. And it's an article about WildStar, which is an upcoming MMO that I've been following. I'll throw the link here in the chat room. And basically, it's just an interview with Matt Markarski, written by Eric Chadwick. And it's about the art direction. Markarski is the creative director at Carbine Studios, who is the studio behind WildStar. And they go through a really in-depth article about the art direction and the creation of the world where they're basing the MMO. Everything from vehicles to technology to environments, the look and feel of everything. And it does get quite technical. Like, they start talking about like shaders and polygons and things that are really in depth to the point where I don't even know what they're talking about. And I mean, and I know video games and I know art direction and stuff like that. But it's a really, when they're talking about the general sort of feel and look and motivations of the MMO team that put the game together, it's very, very interesting, especially even if you're just a fan, an artist, like anything. It's great to hear such a, I guess, detailed account of the decisions they made, good and bad, reaching the final look of WildStar. And it's totally worth checking out. Lots of screen caps and artwork and stuff that they post throughout the article as well. So go check that out on polycount.com. It was published on June 3rd. So that was Monday, I guess, actually.
So, it's a gorgeous game.
Yeah. Oh, God. Looks very, very, very cool. Peyton, you've got something here in the listening section, which is something of rarity.
Yeah,
In our little show here.
I bought a new album.
Yeah. What'd you get?
It's a band called Foreign Fields, and it's kind of, you know, a wispy sort of echoey nostalgic sort of vibe you get for some bands. It's got a little bit of a Neil Young feel to it, kind of mellow, but it's something nice to throw on in the background when you're working on stuff. But I found this band while watching a blacksmithing video that I have linked down in the internet notes. And so you can, you know, watch the video, give the band a try if you want. And if you like them, you can find them on iTunes. But
Good. They're on iTunes. Right on.
Yeah. So they're on iTunes. And I think you can buy it directly from the website as well if you want. But,
oh, cool.
You know, yeah. I have some credits on my iTunes account, so I went and got it from there. But yeah, the video I got it off was a blacksmithing video where a guy was making this Scandinavian Damascus steel knife. Really, really cool stuff.
And oh, cool.
Neiman Tools is the name of it. And there's a link there in the show notes.
So, I mean, I was thinking about this when I was reading the show notes before the show. Why were you watching a blacksmithing video?
I just in my surfing sometimes, I just find, like, there's a guy who has a blacksmith who makes replica swords and stuff, and he also produces stuff for films and movies. He's got like 20 or 30 years experience, and he's called Man at Arms. Is his YouTube channel.
Nice.
So he actually made like he makes real life versions that will actually cut you of prop swords you would see. So he made like a real life version of Jane Lannister's sword. He made a real life version of the sword from Adventure Time. You know, stuff from the Ninja Turtles. Gimli's axe. He did a Damascus steel version of Gimli's axe that will like cut you in half versus the aluminum one you have at the prop, right?
Right. So what's the Damascus steel?
Well, Damascus steel is a way of actually making forging and folding iron.
Okay.
So what they do, what the guy in Man at Arms does, and this other guy is, what they do, you take a series of small metal plates. Different types of iron, nickel, whatever metals. Like one, the other guy, Man at Arms, uses like the pressing masters for vinyl records and stuff, because that's like nickel and that. And it's just a bunch of different types of metal. Tack weld it all together, put it in your forge, and get it to whatever temperature you need to be at it, and then take it and pound it together, and then you fold it. So you may have seven layers. You fold it, you get 14. You heat it up, pound it again. You fold it. You have like a couple hundred layers of very, very thin metal. And it looks like a wood grain by the time you're finished. And when you flick it, you hit it, it makes this very distinctive sound.
Hmm.
But because it's all folded together like that, it's very, very strong, very, very high quality steel. So this guy at on that video I mentioned there, that Neiman Tools, He makes kitchen knives and other knives like that using this technique. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Oh, and there's just something nice about watching someone use their hands to make something, you know, be it an axe or whatever. So sometimes I watch these videos, and, you know, just something nice to throw in the background while you're doing something else.
Absolutely.
So.
Have you watched any of the videos from Punished Props?
Yeah, I think so. He was making some stuff there with like, did he make like a Stormtrooper helmet or some other helmet?
He was making I don't remember if it was
mask.
A helmet.
No,
it was
a mask. Or is it one from Skyrim?
He made a dagger from Skyrim.
Yeah.
And he made
a sniper rifle from StarCraft 2.
Okay.
He just did a sniper rifle from Halo 2.
Okay.
A sniper rifle from Halo? Cool.
Yeah. I saw a video while ago, some guy making a helmet like with the horns and everything from Skyrim or Skyrim or whatever. So
I don't know. No, he's done a shield and a mace for a client, but I don't think it was from Skyrim.
Okay.
Right now, actually, it's Bill Duran and it's Punished Props on YouTube. And he's got a Kickstarter going right now where you can actually buy a design custom prop from him. And what he's done is he's designed this space gun that comes in several pieces, so you can like disassemble it and paint it and put it together, paint it yourself, but you can also customize the different tips. Like, it's kind of made for prop makers or for creative people.
Okay.
So that not everybody gets the same gun, because once you get it, you've got the base, but then how you augment it and make it your own is up to you. And the Kickstarter, I'll have to look for the link, I don't have it right now, but if you go to Punished Props or Chinbeard on Twitter, and you'll find him, and I'm sure he's tweeting the crap out of his Kickstarter right now. So go support Bill, because he's a very, very good craftsman. He does this full-time, and he's looking to make this you know, original prop of his kind of a reality. And it's very, very clever how he's got it put together. But talk about kicking back and watching someone make stuff with their hands. He does some very, very cool stuff. And he's very open about his process. He puts the whole works in sequences of videos online. Like, you know, you start off with like a drawing or a computer model, and then he goes to making a prop mock-up, and then he casts it and molds it and bakes it and there's a vacuum. He's done like a homemade vacuum forming stuff. Like, it's very, very cool stuff.
I saw one of his panels at PAX East a few years ago.
Oh, right on.
And it was very high quality stuff. It was like way over my head, but it was interesting to watch.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And my pick this week is actually a carryover from last week. So this is slightly old news, and it's the paths which were announced for WildStar, which is, again, the MMO that I mentioned earlier. And what paths are a way of playing the game. So we're all familiar, I guess, with being either, you know, an orc or a elf or a human or whatever in these games. Then you can also pick a class. You know, you're a warlock or you're a wizard, or in WildStar, you can be a spell slinger or a warrior. But these paths are actually the type of missions that you get to play in the game, and there's four. There's a soldier, a scientist, settler, and explorer. And depending on the way that you play MMOs is the way that you choose your path. So if you're a soldier, you're going to be doing a lot of fighting. Explorers are kind of like all over the map, literally kind of exploring different vistas and different areas of the world. Scientists get to study everything from wildlife to minerals and plants and all kinds of stuff. And then last but not least is the settlers. And the settlers can actually change the landscape by building houses and social things like bars and what's the other thing, like a trading table or a crafting tables and stuff to share with friends. It's a very, very interesting look, a look at a new way to play MMOs by choosing how you play them and receive certain missions and stuff like that. I mean, everybody still gets a mix, but by choosing your path, you get more of the kind of thing that you want to do. And what's cool about it is, of course, the way that WildStar presents it with their art, their style, and their sense of humor, which is a Makari school instructor, so evil robot crystal line being school instructor, giving a YouTube video breakdown of the different paths. So well worth watching. Everything's explained. There's lots of cool art on the page, all that kind of stuff, which, again, you know, I'll link in the show notes and here in the chat room. But it's super fun. So again, it came out, I want to say, two Wednesdays ago. So it's been a little while, but still worth checking out. I'm all up in this game right now. I can't. I'm even doing fan art right now for it.
Nice.
So, your fan art's been fun to watch.
Well, thanks, man. I'm learning to paint digitally, and it's taking a long time. But I needed something fun to practice on, so I figured that like my own speeder bike design would be kind of the first step. So Mr. Page, we've come to you. What's your big pick this week?
Okay, so it's a Tumblr blog post that someone shared with me on Twitter, and it's a story about Sir Patrick Stewart, Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Recently, last week, Patrick Stewart came out against abuse against women. Apparently, his mother growing up was abused by his father, and he did a speech, and he got an award for doing this speech and all this stuff. And last week at, I think it might have been Colorado's Comic-Con, he was one of the guests there. And one of the speakers came up to him and got the mic and said to him, they just wanted to thank him for his speech and how it meant a lot to them because they grew up in a household where their mother was abused and things like that. And he reiterated the story to the crowd so that everybody knew what she was talking about. And then she started to break down and cry. And one of the attendees took the mic away and said, why don't you come down and give her a hug? And he came down and he gave an audience member a hug and came down and shook people's hands and gave this girl a hug. It's kind of a really touching story.
Yeah, there's an actual video of it floating as well around, which is really worth watching. So
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Did they invite him down, or did he ask if he could give her a hug? I heard it in different ways.
Somebody from the crowd said to him, "Why don't you come down here and give her a hug?" And he just hopped off the stage and ran down and gave her a hug.
Right, like he didn't even think about it.
Yeah, no. Didn't even think about it.
That's really cool. I from a lot of the stuff that I've seen from him lately, I've recently started following him on Facebook, and I don't know if he's on Twitter or not. I can't remember. But,
I think he is.
Yeah, but I was following him on Facebook, and I actually posted one of the things that he had up on Chad's page because he had, you know, just posted this thing about, like, super cool, you know, trying my first slice of pizza or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And I threw it on Chad's wall because, of course, Patrick Stewart is wearing a Montreal Canadiens hat, which is Chad's favorite hockey team. And I was like, you know, this is all really cool and all, Chad, but look at the guy's hat. And so Chad, of course, flipped out. He's like, that's awesome. You know, because both Chad and I, of course, are big TNG fans. But yeah, I've always liked him. Like whenever I've seen interviews with him or any kind of con appearances, I mean, everything is always positive, positive, positive about
him. Yeah, and you never hear anything bad about him.
No.
Ever.
Yeah, well, I think in the video when the woman was talking about the question, asking the question, I think her seeing him make that speech previously had given her the courage to leave the situation she was in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think it was very similar. Like, you ever watch Trekkie, the movie?
No.
Trekker.
Anyway, I have.
Yeah, the guy who started Scotty. I can't remember his name, but they were asking what one of his favorite moments as being like part of the franchise was, and he was saying he got a letter one day from a girl who at a con who was going to kill herself. And he said, don't do it, you know, just come to the next con. I'm going to be over here next week or whatever. And he saw her for a while, and then she disappeared. And then, like, years later, he got a letter from her saying that she was an engineer. And, you know, he basically saved her life and turned her life around, sort of thing. And I think for Patrick Stewart, like, this sort of felt like that sort of moment.
Mm.
You know, because he's talking in depth about, you know, his growing up in this household where paramedics would come by and say, you know, you must have done something to provoke him, saying to his mother, and that sort of thing, because it was always her fault, apparently, right? But years later, he came to realize that his father was suffering from post-traumatic stress from being in the Second World War. So, you know, so he's now contributing to this safe haven group for women, but he's also contributing on the other side towards a group called Combat Stress, for a soldier suffering from PTSD in the name of his father. So it's a really, really touching video to watch. But it's really cool. Neat to see.
It's nice to see celebrities with like really good heads on their shoulders. I mean, I shouldn't say celebrities. He's been knighted, but you know, and rightly so. But I'm just saying, like, there's several out there. I mean,
classy.
Nathan Fillion is another one that, you know, you see doing really positive stuff fun but classy. You know,
you don't see them in the drama. You see them in the, hey, I'm helping people.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. Precisely. So, well, gentlemen, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on joelduggan.com/live. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the podcast is, of course, available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. You can also email the show. Let us know what you thought of the Red Wedding. We are only going to be talking about Game of Thrones for one more week, grand big finale next week, where Jocelyn Moffat is going to be joining us. So you can email the show at citadelcafe@gmail.com or just our show name on Twitter, Facebook, and Google. You can find us just about anywhere. Just search for the Citadel Cafe. Speaking of Jocelyn, The Gamers Inn, of course, happens every Friday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. And they have some special coverage coming up this Tuesday with a super cool special guest who I will let them tease on their show Friday, but it's going to be covering the E3 event with more games hopefully coming out for the Xbox than they announced a couple weeks ago, because they only announced one. So lots of gaming news coming from those guys. GamersInPodcast.com, and of course AmoveTV/TGI is where you can find some details. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I do on my website, joelduggan.com, and that includes my book, StarCrossed Volume 1, which I will be doing a signing for on June 15th at Strange Adventures Comic Book Shop right here in Halifax. And, of course, on Twitter, my name, Joel Duggan. Easy to find. Peyton, where can people find you online?
My website is cardboardtreehouse.com, and you can probably find me more actively on Twitter and Facebook, which is just my name. And how about you, Mr. Lou? Where can people find you, my friend?
Easiest way to find me is Busy Zombie Lord on Twitter. I also do Zombies Ate My Podcast. And this week I actually did a blog post up on the Gamers Inn their blog. I wrote about the free-to-play game Hawken. And I also did my regular column over at Games Are Evil, where I debated the merits of Super Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario World and how I think Super Mario World is better. And so...
Old school. I like them both. That's all I have to say. I'll have to go read the article. Thanks very much, guys. Always a pleasure to have you on, Lou. And I'm sure you will not see the last of Mr. Page. Everybody out there listening, you will see more of all of us. There will be another break probably coming up when myself and Jocelyn are away at Nerdtacular. But we will do our best to record as soon as we can get back and up on our feet, but we're dealing with a lot of plane travel that week, so it's going to be hit and miss depending on how the show goes. At the first week of July, I think, is when we're going to be away. But that's it. You have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Just made me feel like I thought about it for a while after listening. I'm like, oh man, that's just depressing. Like, yeah. I just felt bummed out.
Well, Jocelyn almost stopped reading the books when Rob died. Yeah, she almost gave up.
I knew that was coming. I just didn't know if it was going to be that episode. And then Twitter, somebody said something about weddings, and I went, oh, that's the next episode. Okay.
Yeah, and that's what pissed me off. I mean, like, I know I've read the books. I know I'm not going to have anything really spoiled, but the way that they do the show, you know, they mash certain things together. Certain characters are missing or you know, portrayed in a different way. And, you know, the only fun for someone that hasn't seen the show yet but has read the books is when and how.
Yeah.
But when people tweet out, this is when and this is how, you're like, son of a... Like, it's the thing that I had was I didn't know when the Red Wedding was going to happen.
I think on Sunday we should all post it on our Twitters and Facebooks. Like, please, guys... After the show tonight, some of us won't get a chance to watch it for tomorrow or the next day, you know, DVR or whatever. So please don't say anything. If you enjoy the show, say, you know, Game of Thrones. If you didn't like it, Game of Thrones. Yeah. Leave it at that.
Yeah. Right? Well, no, Jocelyn made a really good point. She's like, you know, there's people that have HBO and there's people that really enjoy tweeting and doing stuff live. Yep. And she knows. And people that do that, do it properly, usually use a hashtag. You can block hashtags on Twitter, and you can just not read Twitter for, you know, the half an hour before up to, you know, a half an hour after Game of Thrones to make sure that you don't see the stuff that you don't want to see.
But Facebook is different.
Yeah, but Facebook is different, and everybody is just like, oh, I'm just going to throw this out there. And it's something that was really, really apparent to me. Not so much for spoilers, but Joss Whedon is on Twitter now, and I'm following him. And he came home after kind of a long day over the weekend. He goes, ah, finally, some alone time. Bracket. He tweeted to 25,000 people. You know, because that's really like you, and just because, I mean, like, I've got like something like 1,100 followers. I mean, I don't know how many of them are actually real. I've stopped tracking that a long time ago. But it's, you know, just because that's not a huge number as far as the internet is concerned, doesn't mean that somebody doesn't retweet me, you know, to another 1,000 or another 2,000 or however. And I mean, like, one little thing that you say could just get blindly retweeted by people that aren't even thinking as they're like riding the bus and, you know, sharing stuff on their phone. And the next thing you know, you ruined stuff for a lot of people.
Yeah.
When I first got on Twitter, the first thing I did, God, 5 years ago, first thing I did was I followed a bunch of celebrities. And then soon I learned that lots of them have nothing to say.
Zero.
That I give crap about. And so I've slowly dwindled it down, and I keep it to, like, people that are in video games, because that's where my tendencies tend to be. I don't follow celebrities. If I find somebody cool that does something, they're usually not a celebrity of any kind, and I follow them, and they might retweet something cool a celebrity says, and that's how I get that information.
Yeah.
But I don't follow the celebrities directly anymore, because I just feel like it's a waste of space.
Mm-hmm. One few I follow is Patton Oswalt. It's like, just like, you know, people who I have a real affinity for, right? But I think Twitter has taken the place of newspapers in what, you know, 100 years ago, newspapers were king. And every little town had its own little, you know, newspaper rag, and it would have the local events, what's happening in your community, right? And now, you know, you go to 5 years ago, you before Twitter or whatever, you go to a website, and that's where you would see your community, people who are into gaming or animation or what have you. But now you can create that community by selecting the people you want to follow on Twitter, and then all of a sudden, my Twitter feed is all about art, right? And just people that I like. And so that's the only information I'm taking in. So sometimes I'm not actually watching the news or anything. I'm like, oh, there's a flood here today. Okay, I didn't even know about that, right? Because I'm just seeing posts about this stuff. So it's kind of neat that you can just totally selectively, you know, create the community of content that you want to listen to or read. So it's neat.
Right. Yeah, well, I recently, my mother is on Twitter now. And well, she was curious about it because, like,
Joel, call your mother.
Yeah. She hasn't done that yet.
Okay.
But no, I'm Jocelyn and I, of course, are big social media people. And then my sister just started tweeting as well, say in the last 6 months or so. And we were talking about it when we were down at Mom's for dinner one night. And Mom's like, okay, well, what is this? Because, I mean, she's starting to hear about it on the news and, you know, friends are talking about it. And she wasn't really quite sure. So we said, well, look, you know, it's a free app. You sign it up. It's like Facebook, except, you know, you can really control more about what's happening. And it's still frowned upon to share crap on Twitter. You can find it if you look for it. But most people really quickly label it as spam. My Facebook feed now that Facebook has started running ads and sponsored posts is absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
Like there
it's
is
unusable.
There's nothing there. Nothing there for me. Yeah. I mean, I just finished signing up for a news group blog app. It's a web app. And I can't remember how many blogs you can use for free, but you can auto post. And now I've set it up so that whenever I post an article or I post a new thing on joelduggan.com, it automatically goes to wherever I want it to go on Facebook, and I never have to log in to post my own stuff again.
Nice.
I'm just done.
I was really late to the Facebook game. I only started doing it like maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago at most. And I finally got used to it, and then they changed the interface, and it got unusable. And then I finally get used to that interface, and they changed it on me again. And I was like, they're trying to make me not want to use this.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I've just kind of given up. Now, so.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, in Twitter, I think Twitter tried. Does Twitter still do sponsored posts? Like, I haven't seen
them. Oh, that's all they want you to do now.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't noticed anything in my feed. The only thing that I'm noticing now is that they've changed the way that retweets work. So I'm seeing a lot of stuff, and I'm skimming over a lot of stuff in my Twitter feed because I don't recognize the avatars. It's like, who's that? I don't know who that is. I don't, like, you know, all of a sudden I'm looking at the stuff like, don't
I
care.
I will admit I'm probably to blame for some of those. Well, if I see a cool link, I usually retweet it.
I do the same thing. But usually what they would do would have two avatars. There'd be the avatar of the person that you follow. And then next to it would be the avatar of the person that they retweeted. So it would have value for you. It would have weight. I'd be like, oh, Lou retweeted that. Lou's a funny guy. That's probably a cool thing, or it's about video games or whatever. But now it's just the person, and there's this little tiny post at the very bottom that says retweeted by, you know, X. And it's really, it's hard now. I'm looking at my Twitter feed, and I'm starting to realize I'm skimming over a lot of it that I probably would be interested in, but I don't recognize it.